He was following the earth through its days, drifting with the rhythms of its myriad pulses, seeping through the webs of its life, swelling with its tides, turning with its weight. Always the fracture kept returning, a dull, disjointed, distant ache. And now he was flying through a land of light. The light was time. The tides of it were days receding. The fracture he had sensed, the second fracture, lay in the distance before him, across the land, the thickness of a single hair, across the dreaming landscape of the days of earth. And suddenly he was upon it. He danced dizzily over the edge as the dreamland dropped sheer away beneath him, a stupefying precipice into nothing, him wildly twisting, clawing at nothing, flailing in horrifying space, spinning, falling. Across the jagged chasm had been another land, another time, an older world, not fractured from, but hardly joined. Two earths. He woke. A cold breeze brushed the feverish sweat standing on his forehead. The nightmare was spent, and so, he felt, was he. His shoulders dropped. He gently rubbed his eyes with the tips of his fingers. At last he was sleepy, as well as very tired. As to what it meant, if it meant anything at all, he would think about it in the morning, for now he would go to bed and sleep, his own bed, his own sleep. He could see his house in the distance, and wondered why this was. It was silhouetted against the moonlight, and he recognised its rather dull, blockish shape. He looked about him, and noticed that he was about 18 inches above the rose bushes of one of his neighbours, John Ainsworth. His rose bushes were carefully tended, pruned back for the winter, strapped to canes, and labelled, and Arthur wondered what he was doing above them. He wondered what was holding him there, and when he discovered that nothing was holding him there, he crashed awkwardly to the ground. He picked himself up, brushed himself down, and hobbled back to his house on a sprained ankle. He undressed and toppled into bed. While he was asleep, the phone rang again. It rang for fully 15 minutes, and caused him to turn over twice. It never, however, stood a chance of waking him up. Chapter 8. Arthur awoke feeling wonderful, absolutely fabulous, refreshed, overjoyed to be home, bouncing with energy, hardly disappointed at all to discover it was the middle of February. He almost danced to the fridge, found the three least hairy things in it, put them on a plate, and watched them intently for 2 minutes. Since they made no attempt to move within that time, he called them breakfast and ate them. Between them, they killed a virulent space disease he'd picked up without knowing it in the Phlegethon gas swamps a few days earlier, which otherwise would have killed off half the population of the Western Hemisphere, blinded the other half, and driven everyone else psychotic and sterile. So the Earth was lucky there. He felt strong, he felt healthy. He vigorously cleared away the junk mail with a spade and then buried the cat. Just as he was finishing that, the phone went, but he let it ring while he maintained a moment's respectful silence. Whoever it was would ring back if it was important. He kicked the mud off his shoes and went back inside. There had been a small number of significant letters in the piles of junk. Some documents from the council, dated 3 years earlier, relating to the proposed demolition of his house, and some other letters about the setting up of a public inquiry into the whole bypass scheme in the area. There was also an old letter from Greenpeace, the ecological pressure group to which he occasionally made contributions, asking for help with their scheme to release dolphins and orcas from captivity, and some postcards from friends vaguely complaining that he never got in touch these days. He collected these things together and put them in a cardboard file, which he marked Things to Do. Since he was feeling so vigorous and dynamic that morning, he even added the word Urgent. He unpacked his towel and a few other odd bits and pieces from the plastic bag he had acquired at the Port Brasta megamarket. The slogan on the side was a clever and elaborate pun in lingua Centauri, which was completely incomprehensible in any other language, and therefore entirely pointless for a duty-free shop at a spaceport. The bag also had a hole in it, so he threw it away. He realized with a sudden twinge that something else must have dropped out in the small spacecraft that had brought him to Earth, kindly going out of its way to drop him right beside the A303. He had lost his battered and space-worn copy of the thing which had helped him find his way across the unbelievable wastes of space he had traversed. He had lost the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Well, he told himself, this time I really won't be needing it again. He had some calls to make. He had decided how to deal with the massive contradictions his return journey precipitated, which was that he would simply brazen it out. He phoned the BBC and asked to be put through to his department head. "Oh, hello, Arthur Dent here. Look, sorry I haven't been in for 6 months, but I've gone mad." "Oh, not to worry," said his department head. "Thought it was probably something like that. Happens here all the time. How soon can we expect you?"
When do hedgehogs stop hibernating?"
Sometime in the spring, I think."
"Well, I'll be in shortly after that."
"Righty-ho." He flipped through the yellow pages and made a short list of numbers to try.
"Oh, hello. Is that the Old Elms Hospital?"
Yes, I was just phoning to see if I could have a word with Fenella. Fenella... good Lord, silly me. I'll forget my own name next. Fenella... isn't this ridiculous? A patient of yours, dark-haired girl, came in last night."
"I'm afraid we don't have any patients called Fenella."
"Oh, don't you?
I meant Fiona, of course. We just call her Fen."
"I'm sorry. Goodbye." Click. Six conversations along these lines began to take their toll on his mood of vigorous, dynamic optimism, and he decided that before it deserted him entirely, he would take it down to the pub and parade it a little. He had had the perfect idea for explaining away every inexplicable weirdness about himself at a stroke, and he whistled to himself as he pushed open the door which had so daunted him last night.